Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Gaffney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God and his kingdom. Well, we're coming to you from our mobile studio, and visual appearance is always a little different, but I think you're going to find that the content is every bit as high as we strive for every day, especially when we have the chance to visit with people of the caliber of our first guest, Carolyn Glick. Carolyn is, of course, as far as I'm concerned, the best strategic analyst and commentator on events in the Middle East. She hails from these days. She is based in Israel, originally from the United States, but very much engaged in trying to look out for both the interests of her now adopted country, Israel, as well as those of the United States, in the face of determined efforts by enemies, yes, foreign and domestic, to take both countries down. Carolyn is the host of the Carolyn Glick Show, a fabulous podcast. She is a commentator for the Jewish News Syndicate, as well as the author of several important books, including one very relevant to the present moment, The Israeli Solution. Carolyn, it's great to have you back. Thank you for being one of our senior fellows at our Center for Security Policy and for all that you do in so many respects to stand up for the cause of liberty and freedom and the free world. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for your introduction. Thank you for your introduction.
You're most welcome. Let me start by asking you to explain to us, as they say, what exactly it is that the Biden administration is up to in seemingly by the day becoming not only more and more hostile to our ally, Israel, and especially its democratically elected prime minister and government, Benjamin Netanyahu and company, but also its determination, I can't figure out another way to describe it other than to try to save Hamas.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of a puzzling, it's a puzzling situation from an American interest perspective, because the effect of the Biden administration's policies towards Israel and Hamas is to enable and even really to guarantee that Hamas wins this war. Because what Hamas needs to win this war is simply to survive Israel's counterattack that we initiated after we were invaded by a division strength force of Hamas terrorists from Gaza on October 7th, who, as you know, committed a one-day holocaust against Israel. It wasn't a terrorist attack per se, as John Spencer from West Point, who I just interviewed on my show, said, you know, this wasn't a terrorist attack. It's a misnomer to call it that. It was a it was an invasion, and the invasion was geared towards slaughter. That's what they did. So Israel launched a counter assault on Gaza, and all that Hamas needs to do, you know, its concept of victory is just to survive, and they don't even care if they're alive or not. And they don't. They certainly. But part of their warfighting strategy, their doctrine, is to see as many civilian deaths among their own local population as they can possibly achieve, and that they do
the
through
worse, the better.
Building
worse.
Their military infrastructure underneath civilian homes and schools, clinics, hospitals, etc., mosques. So that's what they do as a matter of practice. That's their doctrine. And waiting for the United States to turn against Israel and force Israel to stand down and lose by simply not fighting to victory. And lo and behold, Hamas has followed its doctrine 100%, and the Americans, as Hamas anticipated, is swooping in and telling Israel, time's up, enough's enough, and you're not allowed to fight anymore, and using Hamas's own battle plan of increasing, and or at least alleging, even when it's not true, massive numbers of civilian deaths it, as a means to force Israel to stand down. And so it's very alarming, but the American policy is exactly what Hamas wants it to be, and what American interest is advanced by America's enmeshment and participation in Hamas's war plan against America's most powerful and important and loyal ally in the Middle East, Israel. is I can't actually fathom. So from that perspective, from the perspective of America's national interests, I don't see any overlap between what the United States is doing and America's national security interests in the Middle East.
Yeah, well, I think actually it's the opposite. We are subverting our
Right.
own interests day in and day out. And it's not just with respect to Hamas, of course, it's with respect to Hezbollah and the Houthis and Iran, the master behind them all. And I, Carolyn, I guess I just have to ask you about what seems to me to be now both a manifestation of this policy, but also a very profound ratcheting up of its implementation. And that is this idea of creating very quickly a port for the purpose of bringing more food and construction materials, some of which will almost certainly wind up in the hands of Hamas, indeed, the preponderance of it probably. And thereby enable, among other things, the reconstruction of those tunnels or headquarters or other facilities from which to wage their jihad against Israel. And folks, their jihad ultimately against us as well. Talk about this port idea, Carolyn, where it came from, and its implications, and why the government of Israel seems to be suggesting that it's fine with it.
Oh, look, Israel is suggesting that it's fine with us because we don't want to get into another fight with the United States. I mean, there's a really big problem in terms of having an open confrontation with the United States, which is that the United States has manipulated its ties with the United States, with Israel over the past decade. It was done under the Obama administration
Yes.
to render Israel dependent on American munitions. And then they use Israel's dependence that they encouraged and really forced on Israel by killing our domestic military industries as a means to coerce Israel into taking actions or not taking actions that are required for military victory. So that's what we're seeing today. And so Israel is sort of trying to figure out how to thread the needle if it's possible at all. And I think that the decision with the port was just to hope, if I had to assess that, that the Republicans would kill the idea in the on the Hill, or that it simply won't happen because the timeline is too extended. But overall, the American idea, the Biden administration idea that President Biden presented for the first time at the State of the Union address, was that they want to build a so-called temporary port in Gaza, which is basically going to be a 500 meter long pier that's going to allow deep water vessels to anchor and offload supplies to Gaza. And they're doing this under the headline humanitarian aid. But what we've seen since the outset is that the United States very early on was demanding that Israel permit humanitarian aid to come into Gaza in order to prevent human suffering of uninvolved civilians. But the vast majority of this aid is, as Israel warned, has been used as resupply to Hamas, enabling them to survive, which again, that's the goal of their war. So the United States is guaranteeing Hamas's survival. They've taken most of the humanitarian aid. So to the degree that there is any human suffering and privation going on in Gaza, it's entirely Hamas's fault. And rather than recognize this and allow Israel to do what would be the most sensible thing under the circumstances, which is to lay siege on Gaza and permit civilians to leave the area as they leave every
Of
other war
course.
zone, whether it's in Ukraine or in Iraq or Syria or anywhere else, the United States is forcing Israel to keep the entire civilian population of Gaza in Gaza, preventing any of the Gazans from leaving. And by the way, 30,000 or 40,000 Gazans have left. But they do it at great price. They have to pay $10,000 in bribes to Egyptian military personnel at the border in order to win an opening of the border for themselves so that they're being extorted
Carolyn.
by the Egyptians instead of being helped by the Americans.
Excuse me, we have to take a break. We'll be right back with more with the great Carolyn Glick. Stay tuned. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Our nation's founders were profoundly concerned, as Ben Franklin famously put it, about whether we could keep the republic they bequeathed to us. Consequently, they baked into the Constitution checks and balances designed to prevent the kind of concentration of power that tyrants and even democracies had previously used to destroy freedom. Team Biden is currently stealthily subverting such safeguards in favor of so-called global governance by an unaccountable and increasingly totalitarian foreign entity called the World Health Organization. Yesterday, West Virginia Secretary of State Mack Warner publicly denounced this subversion of our limited representative form of government. Every American patriot should join him in exposing and rejecting two WHO agreements now set to be adopted in May without the public's knowledge, let alone assent or the approval of two-thirds of the U.S. Senate. Do that and stand with freedom at sovereigntycoalition.org. This is Frank Affney. We're back, and Carolyn Glick, I'm very pleased to say, is still with us. She is a senior fellow of our Center for Security Policy and, well, to my way of thinking, just the best when it comes to analysis and courageous, forthright, clear-eyed commentary about what is happening in her adopted country, Israel, and being done to her by the Biden administration, especially. And Carolyn, you were talking about the agenda of this administration and how it's now manifest in this port exercise. It's been observed that the problem is really not a question of the supply of food and assistance. I'm told that it's actually twice the level that's been put into Gaza than was true before October 7th, but a matter of distribution, not least the fact that when this stuff gets into the hands of Hamas, they hive off with 60 to 70% of it, leaving the people in difficulty, it's to say the least. There is another way of getting that distribution problem addressed, I understand, and that is that there's a port in Israel just north of the Gaza Strip's northern border, Ashdod, that could be used, and a crossing that the Palestinians attacked on October 7th, that could be used to get it in and keep it under control so that it's not, as has been done to this point, whether it's through airdrops or trucks being driven in or otherwise from Egypt, it's falling into the wrong hands. It is helping perpetuate Hamas and save it, not bring about its demise. Your thoughts?
I mean, Ashdod port would be a possibility, but again, you have to question what it is that they want to bring into Gaza, right? Because as you said, they have sufficient food if it were distributed properly, but the United States doesn't want it to be properly distributed. The idea of humanitarian aid here is being used as a political weapon to discredit Israel and to demonize its war effort in order to delegitimize it in order to stop it. Because the United States
is the idea of keeping the Palestinians hostage there, right?
Exactly. The whole thing is geared towards reaching an end that people didn't realize, which is that the United States is on Hamas's side here and is undermining Israel at this point. I mean, they're calling openly for the overthrow of the Israeli government, not for the eradication of Hamas. So I think that's important to note. But yeah, Ashdod would be a possibility. El Arish in Egypt is also a full service port. There's no reason not to use that. The reason is that the Biden administration is seeking to use what's happened now to Israel with the invasion and then our subsequent counteroffensive in Gaza as a means to force Israel to accept the Palestinian state, which of course is a terrorist state in which Hamas would be the most powerful faction. And even if it weren't, there's no actual distinction between Hamas and the U.S.-funded and armed Palestinian Authority in terms of their desire and their goal of annihilating Israel and killing all the Jews. Both of them share that goal. Both of them are equally engaged in terrorism and supporting it as a means of carrying out their goal of the annihilation of Israel. So the United States wants to build this state. They see the port as a way to wrest control over Gaza away from the IDF and to put the United States in the middle of IDF forces and Hamas, as what Samantha Powers, the director of USAID, referred to in 2002 at the height of the previous Palestinian terror war against Israel, that the United States would send what she referred to as a mammoth protection force to protect the Palestinians, who are a terrorist society, again, dedicated to the annihilation of the Jews and the Jewish state, against or from the IDF, which she even back then, 20 years ago, considered to be the enemy of the good, that the United States had to send its forces into battle in order to defend Palestinian terrorists from. Yeah, so, she's now in charge of USAID, which is providing this fake humanitarian aid to Hamas terrorists in Gaza. And so she's no doubt responsible for this idea, because it just sort of goes to the heart of what she's always sought vis-a-vis Israel, which is to put U.S. forces against Israeli forces. It would also place them at great risk, just as U.S. Marines were at great risk in Beirut in 1983, when they carried out a similar operation to try to curtail Israel's military operations against the PLO, on behalf of the PLO and against Israel under the Reagan administration.
Look, this is crazy on so many different levels, but it's clearly crazy like a fox. It's aimed at achieving a policy purpose that, let's be clear, I don't think, you know, any but a relative handful of Americans think is desirable. Saving Hamas is not broadly supported in this country, needless to say. So, Carolyn, two quick points. One is that, as you mentioned, the government of Israel, democratically elected, is now also being targeted by the Biden administration for overthrow. Now, President Biden is running, I did a commentary on this morning, running for office on a plank, a central plank of his commitment to defending democracy. This does not sound like defense of democracy. It sounds like, you know, the enemy of democracy instead. What do you think?
I think you're right. I mean, it was interesting that Kamala Harris, the vice president, said that the United States supports the Israeli people, not the Israeli government, as if the Israeli government was a terrorist organization, because that's the sort of language that they used to describe Hamas, which is, of course, also supported by the Palestinian people, which voted for it and continues to support it. But be that as it may, you know, what they don't seem to understand, and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu explained this in a response to the American assaults against him that he gave to Axel Springer Media, the Bild, and I think Politico also ran it, where he said, look, you know, I mean, the Israeli people are unanimous practically in their support for the government's war aims. These aren't my private goals. These are the goals of the Israeli people. They stand by me 100%. And I would just add to that, that the body most susceptible to American pressure, that is the place where the United States can get the most traction for what it wants to accomplish, is the government. It's not the Israeli people. The Israeli people don't really care about American pressure and the expectation that the public has from the government. And this has also been borne out by polling data, is that the government has to stand up to American pressure and achieve victory in this war. Among other things, you know, crossing Biden's red line of not taking over Hamas's final outpost in Rafah, the border town adjacent to Egypt.
Right. In a previous interview we did on our program, you talked a bit about that poll. As I recall, it was like 85% said they didn't care whether there was going to be a conflict with the United States over this. Israel has to prosecute this war to its successful conclusion. I couldn't agree with that more. Carolyn, I did just want to add one other point on this. 30 years ago, almost to the day, our Center for Security Policy produced a report signed off on by 10 prominent national security professionals, five of them former four-star generals and admirals, about the idea that was then being very aggressively pursued by the Clinton administration and the government of Israel under Yitzhak Rabin. And the whole idea was that Israel needed to give land for peace, in this case, the Golan Heights, to Syria. And the whole thing was going to be lubricated because there were obvious concerns about doing this, given that the Syrians had attacked Israel relentlessly when they controlled the Golan Heights. It was going to be lubricated by putting U.S. forces on the ground there. And we put together an article, which subsequently, a report actually, that subsequently ran as a long article in Commentary Magazine. And I believe it's no exaggeration to say it had a decisive effect in slowing things down to the point where, sadly, Rabin was assassinated and the whole thing came to a grinding halt. It shows, my point is, it shows that the United States can the American people, the American elites, the Congress certainly, can stave off a disastrous idea, which this, I call it the portentous port idea, is putting in motion. We have 20 seconds. Give me a quick burst on that, if you would.
Yeah, I would just say that it's very important to understand that when Joe Biden said that there would be no troops on the ground, U.S. forces on the ground in Gaza, that that's something that you can't take at face value, because who's going to build the port? Is it going to be the U.S. Corps of Engineers? Who will be manning the port? It's very, very difficult as a practical matter to take that seriously, and it really should be scrutinized. And all the plans, because I believe that they're harebrained, have to be investigated by the relevant committees in Congress.
They
and,
have to.
And
once
right they
quick.
Are, right, right and once quick. They are, I think that the plan will go away.
We have to leave. Speaking of go away, Carolyn Glick, thank you for your wonderful contributions to this program and so much more. I know you keep it up, and we'll hopefully have you back soon. God bless you.
Thank
Stay
you.
Tuned, folks. We'll
thank
be right
you.
Back.
Night after night, in cities across the country, black garbed assailants clash with police in the streets, smash windows, and throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa: Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa, and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa: Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
Welcome back, and a very special welcome to our next guest, a first-time participant in Securing America, I believe, though we've been talking about having him join us for some time. He is a veteran of the United States Army of some 23 years. He rose through the ranks to that of a lieutenant colonel, starting out in the artillery and graduating to the Judge Advocate General Corps. He has, in the past 7 years, served with great distinction in a civilian capacity in his native state of West Virginia as its Secretary of State. We've catch up with him at a moment when he is now a candidate for governor of the state of West Virginia. I had the privilege of spending some time with him in California over the weekend and was able to speak with him about a subject of great mutual concern. And it's a privilege to be able to talk with him about it. We'll be discussing it a little bit further in our next segment with our friend Bill Walton. But I want to get started with, I think, one of the most senior elected officials in the United States of America, a man who is going to be speaking on behalf of a very important party, whether they know it or not just yet, to the fight that is now underway in earnest to prevent the sovereignty of our nation, the rights of the states to govern our public health policies, and not least, our medical freedoms. And that would be the threat that we face in all those respects from the World Health Organization. Our guest is Mac Warner. He is going to tell us a bit about an initiative that he took just today that I think is not only estimable, yes, but also vitally needed. And I couldn't be more pleased to welcome him to our microphones and cameras. Let's hear what you've been up to, Mac. First of all, thank you so much for joining us, but also thank you for your leadership in this important fight.
Well, thank you, Frank. It's good to be with you. Although the subject matter that we're talking about is really one of the most dangerous things that has gone on here in the United States recently, and that's this Biden administration effort. Not only we've been a part of the World Health Organization, but they're ready to cede sovereignty of the United States of America to this World Health Organization. And that's a very scary thing.
And let me just say, one of the pieces of this that's so troubling is they've been doing it almost entirely in secret. This is a very stealthy effort, as well as one of incredible import, is it not?
It is. It's gone under the radar, and they're ready to do it by executive fiat, by signing an agreement, not going through the treaty process, which if this were to actually be a good thing, it would go through the treaty process. But they know that it's not a good thing, and so they're trying to skirt the having to go through the Senate approval and the normal treaty process. And so they're doing it by an agreement, and therefore just letting Biden, with his own signature, just one man, decide that he's going to hand over the sovereignty of the United States to this global organization.
In such a sweeping way, too. But before we get into some of the details of this, Mac, I did want to ask you about the importance that the founders of this country placed on the Senate serving as a kind of quality control mechanism on precisely these kinds of things, where they envisioned that somebody could conceivably come up with a scheme to undermine, or in fact, really threaten the outright destruction of our constitutional republic by doing deals offshore. So a two-thirds majority of the Senate is required. How important do you think that is, especially when something like states' rights is involved as well?
Sure. The whole premise of our government is checks and balances. That's why we have three branches of government. And just much like today, where we have a very divided politic, you know, the Republicans and Democrats, conservatives, liberals, back in the Jefferson, Washington, Adams days, they were very divided. They had different perspectives on whether there should be a strong federal government or a weak federal government. And it was only through a series of compromises that they come up with this miracle of 1776 that gave us these basic rights. So it's described in our Declaration of Independence. The reason for government is to secure the God-given rights. It's not to, you know, the rights don't flow from the government. They flow from God. Right. And then the Constitution itself then divides this this power, and it sets up this treaty basis that says, no, we're not going to let one person decide the fate of America. And that's what Biden is attempting to do right now.
Well, and to make it worse, of course, as you know, and you've issued, as I understand it, a press release about all of this that people can find, I assume, at your campaign URL. And I invite you to give us that in a moment. But yes. The idea is not just to have one man and the president of the United States make this sweeping decision about, well, powers that are not actually vested in the federal government by that very constitution, but he's actually talking about turning over this power to make public health policy and to compel what is to be done about a so-called public health emergency of international concern to somebody wholly unelected, actually, in this case, a Marxist bureaucrat picked for the job of World Health Organization Director General by the Chinese Communist Party. What could possibly go wrong with that?
Not answerable whatsoever to the American people. And what you're referring to specifically is the 10th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution that says anything that it's not specifically enumerated and given to the federal government shall be left to the states. Well, there is absolutely nothing in the U.S. Constitution that says healthcare will be a federal authority. So that is retained with the states. So what I propose is that what Biden is about to do would be unconstitutional. He wouldn't have the authority to speak for the states and say your healthcare must be mandated by the World Health Organization. And this, I'm going to go to Lenin for just a second, where Lenin said that the basis for communism has to be healthcare. When you see healthcare over to the government, then they control all the aspects of our lives. And so recently we've seen, of course, COVID with the vaccine mandates and that sort of thing, and how terrible of an idea that was to force that on the American people. But it goes so much further. In this approach, they're having these social determinants. And when you bring in social determinants, you bring in things such as equity and racism and the climate extremists. And I mean, all the gun control, I mean, all these things can be manipulated into an emergency crisis, a healthcare crisis. And that is the authority then that this Secretary General of the World Health Organization would use to impose these things on the American people and the rest of the world that we want nothing to do with.
Well, just to hone in on something you just said, I'd like you to speculate on how the people of West Virginia would likely respond if they found out, especially after it's an accomplished fact, that this Marxist in Geneva is going to tell them that gun violence is a public health emergency of international concern, and that what must be done about it is that those guns they own legally are to be collected and taken away from them. How's that likely to sit with voters, among others, in West Virginia, do you think?
It's not going to go over very well at all. That's the last thing we would want is this director general, and I think he's from Ethiopia, sitting there in Switzerland making these determinations. And again, think how far and wide this can go. This is an idea. It's very much like the climate extremism, that they're using CO2 as a way of, it's about control. It's not about cleaning the environment. It's about control. Well, this is, I use the analogy of Obamacare, what that did to healthcare in the United States. This World Health Organization would be the Obamacare on steroids globally. That this one man can make this determination and start dictating to us everything from pre-birth through the end of life decisions, with everything in between, and using things such as the transgender, the woke agenda, the, you mentioned guns. It could be anything that they dreamed up they could label a healthcare emergency.
And it doesn't have to be anything involving a pandemic, which is where this whole thing sort of got started. This is, as you say, basically anything that's on the left's agenda. And Mr. Secretary, again, I want to just impress upon our audience, there have been some on Capitol Hill who have taken some steps here in Washington to address this situation. Notably, I want to thank the House of Representatives for having passed through the House a bill, the Foreign Operations Appropriations Bill, that zeroes out funding for the World Health Organization, that actually says there will be no further funding, by the way, unless whatever agreements these guys are cobbling together will be taken up and approved by the Senate. That's very helpful, but the Democrats in the Senate are going to be bound and determined to prevent that bill from, you know, being passed and fully enacted by this president. This is all the more reason why we need people like yourself. And I would hope that every other candidate for governor in West Virginia, but frankly, every elected official or would be elected official across this country, will do as you have done today, sir. And I strongly commend you for it, which is to stand up against this World Health Organization, as the Chinese Communist Party calls it, global governance gambit. We've got to stop it, and your leadership, I know, is going to be incredibly helpful to that. How can people learn more about your stated position, sir, and your other positions for that matter?
They can go to macwarner.com. That's my campaign account. And I'm so glad you brought that up, Frank, because that's what people want to know, is what can they do to assist? Right. And so one is the Congress can decide, the House of Representatives can cut off funding. But of course, they've got the problem with the Senate. So, but that's one thing that they can do. The normal person can get on the website and talk, go to read about this declaration and sign the declaration. It says
sovereigntycoalition.org is where they can do all of that. Sir, I hate to cut you off. We're out of time. Thank you for your leadership, and come back to us with updates on all of this and more.
Thanks.
Godspeed.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Our nation's founders were profoundly concerned, as Ben Franklin famously put it, about whether we could keep the republic they bequeathed to us. Consequently, they baked into the Constitution checks and balances designed to prevent the kind of concentration of power that tyrants and even democracies had previously used to destroy freedom. Team Biden is currently stealthily subverting such safeguards in favor of so-called global governance by an unaccountable and increasingly totalitarian foreign entity called the World Health Organization. Yesterday, West Virginia Secretary of State Mack Warner publicly denounced this subversion of our limited representative form of government. Every American patriot should join him in exposing and rejecting two WHO agreements now set to be adopted in May without the public's knowledge, let alone assent or the approval of two-thirds of the U.S. Senate. Do that and stand with freedom at sovereigntycoalition.org. This is Frank Affney.
Welcome back, and a very special welcome to our next guest, one of our regulars, indeed one of our favorite regulars. His name is Bill Walton. He is the host of his own terrific program. It is called The Bill Walton Show. He brings to it a lot of very interesting experiences, notably as a master of the universe, now recovering on Wall Street. He has also been a leader of one of our most important conservative movement organizations, that would be the Council for National Policy. He is a go-to guy on a whole host of issues, and we're delighted to be able to catch up with him to talk about several of them at this very important moment. Bill Walton, welcome back.
Frank, great talking with you.
Thank you. I wanted to start by focusing on an issue that I know you are now seized with, as am I, and more to the point, you're really leading on in so many different respects, and that would be this idea of empowering the World Health Organization to become the dictator worldwide of public health policy, including here in the United States, violation of our Constitution and medical freedoms and much more. You have, I understand it, a new edition of your podcast, The Bill Walton Show, coming out even as we speak, about this World Health Organization gambit. Tell us who you have on and what its most important tantalizingly interesting results were.
Well, tonight we'll be posting on CPAC Now, and then tomorrow on YouTube, Rumble, and all the other podcast platforms, a show with Reggie Littlejohn and Merrill Nass together with you, Frank. They're leading a group we're calling the Sovereignty Coalition, and the thing we're aimed at here is that the Biden administration, and one of their many, many egregious moves, is working very hard to cede U.S. sovereignty to the World Health Organization in the event of any other sort of international emergency as defined by the World Health Organization and its president, Tedros. Mm-hmm. And Merrill and Reggie are all over this issue. Merrill is a doctor who identify the use of anthrax as a biological weapon in Rhodesia back almost 35 years ago. And she was a leader in fighting the CDC and the World Health Organization's attempts to lock us down and prevent us from taking medicines which protected us from the virus. Yes. And she lost her, she had her medical license. They haven't revoked it. They suspended it because if by doing it that way, they don't have to call it's easier for them to do it without any questions. So anyway, she's now a doctor.
This is of course, practice. The COVID-19 virus you're talking about.
Exactly.
Happened in the state of Maine is, I guess, the outfit that's sanctioning her in this fashion. She's a hero of this fight, as is Reggie Littlejohn. Talk a little bit about Reggie's main points.
Well, Reggie is a Yale Law School graduate, former litigator. She's been working in China with China to prevent the forced abortions of Chinese children, and has since moved into a more global role in helping us pushback and what the World Health Organization has in mind. Now, to refresh everybody's recollection, the World Health Organization is an advisory body set up as a part of the United Nations back in 1948. And their track record is abysmal. They've been wrong on just about everything in the last three quarters of a century almost. And they, you know, their track record during the COVID crisis was terrible. Almost everything they recommended was wrong. And now they want to seek not the advisory power, but they want mandatory power to determine how not just the United States, but all the other 195 signatories to the World Health Organization agreement to make. And in doing this, they're redesigning their agreement, which in some 100 places said may do this, may do that, with shall do this. So the countries are basically going to be towing the line of Tedros. The other thing, Frank,
but as you say, I mean, this really bears emphasizing, as you said, Bill, the conduct of this outfit, even when it just had advisory responsibilities in the COVID pandemic, was, well, incompetent at best, and frankly, I think malfeasant, and among other things, imposing upon us the China model of lockdowns and mandates of various kinds, jabs with untested vaccines and so on, right?
Well, why wouldn't they? I mean, Tedros is the handpicked selection of the Chinese Communist Party.
Right. And Marxists out of Ethiopia, no less.
You know, this is just yet one of many globalist elite initiatives that the Biden administration is pushing. This agreement would come into effect the end of May, first week of June, where they're meeting in an assembly to go over this. We're assuming that they're going to somehow get the vote to do it. And here's the thing, the United States is pushing this, and we are going to vote for it. And right. This is yet another reason that the Biden administration cannot remain in place after this next election. If they do, God knows what's going to happen to our sovereignty in this and other organizations.
But Bill, what's so worrying is that before we get a chance to have a new administration in place, the vote will take place, we think, at the end of May, and maybe lock us into a whole host of infrastructure arrangements, among other things.
No? Well, they're doing all sorts of lawyerly things to try to lock us up. There's a two-year withdrawal process, 3 years. There's all sorts of legal maneuvers they're making to make this mandatory, even regardless of who's the American president. Well, if you get a tough American president, then I have somebody in mind who is the Republican nominee. I think he can just tell them to pound sand. It'll be ugly, but we can do it. And that's just another reason we need to have Trump in office.
Well, I think that's right. I will say, while he's made it clear he's going to withdraw from this outfit as we need to, the things like, and I'm sure you talked about this with Reggie and Merrill, the digital gulag, as we call it, that will be instituted, and the censorship arrangements that are being made mandatory, and so much more, is really
they're building mandatory surveillance into this agreement, where all the countries are expected to electronically and digitally monitor their people.
More of the social credit system.
The thing to keep
China model. Bill, we have to take a pause. Stay with me. We're going to have a pause, and we're going to come right back with much more with Bill Walton. You're not going to want to miss it. Stay tuned. Yeah. We're back, and we are visiting with Bill Walton, as we do about this time each week. We're very pleased to have him with us always, but especially in light of the leading role that he is now playing in trying to help expose and defeat the most serious assault on our sovereignty since the Panama Canal Treaty, which was an epic fight, and we need one at least as active and effective as that. And Bill, what is the, I think, most important takeaway in terms of what Americans listening to this program and yours need to be doing now about the WHO?
First, let me just explain one of the horribles here. This is not just about health, narrowly defined. This is about health as newly defined. There's something called One Health, which equates humans, animals, plants, and the environment on a level playing field. So Tedros could declare a climate emergency that then they would define as a health emergency, which would give them all the powers of lockdowns, passport, vaccine passports, masks, et cetera, et cetera. All the hell we went through a couple of years ago. And
anything else that he decides he needs to do.
Anything else. It could be a gun emergency. It could be anything. So this is not this is not your grandparents' health policy.
WHO.
This is something egregious. So
sure.
This needs to be stopped. And we're mounting a campaign to letters and involvement from attorney generals, governors, state legislatures. I mean, the states have the right to their own healthcare policies. It's not something that the federal government necessarily or even has slightly the right to take over. We need to reclaim state sovereignty, not just American sovereignty. And you know, we need to get the Senate involved in this because they're trying to define this as not a treaty. If it's called a treaty, then it needs Senate approval. Now, interestingly, Frank, the senators are running away from this vote. And so we need to hold their feet to the fire.
Amen. Well, this is one of the most important lines of effort here. And Bill, we so appreciate your collaboration and leadership, especially with the CPAC coalition. Let me turn quickly, Bill, to another topic. As we have been warning about for some time in our committee, in the present danger, China, of which you are an important member, TikTok, what's widely thought of as a sort of innocuous entertainment platform for kids predominantly, is actually a weapon in the arsenal of Xi Jinping and his Chinese Communist Party. There is legislation that's expected to come up, as I understand it, in the very near future to try to essentially shut it down if it doesn't, devolve the ownership of this platform, at least the part of it that operates here in the United States, to American owners. What are your thoughts on whether this is a problem or not, the TikTok that is, and what needs to be done about it?
Well, let me tell you what the Chinese think about TikTok. They will not allow the same TikTok in China that they're pushing into the United States.
Right.
They realize it's a very effective, maybe the most effective tool of social control in this addicted social media world we're living in. And they won't let the content in China that they're pushing here.
Mm-hmm.
It's owned by it's controlled by ByteDance, which unsurprisingly is controlled by the Chinese Communist Party. I say unsurprisingly because every major company in China is controlled by the party, and it's an instrument of state power. And it's wild, but on the other side of it, it's wildly addictive, fun. There are lots of innocent entertainment in there, some mostly not so innocent. So we've got to do something about it for our national security, because in addition to influencing people, it's also a massive data collection tool that needs to be halted, because we can't have the Chinese knowing. Well, they probably already do, but this is one of the more effective tools. We've got to either shut it down in the United States, which is the best case scenario. But failing that, because there are a lot of constituencies built into this. Carlyle Group owns a chunk of ByteDance, and there are lots of private equity firms and investment firms which have a stake in TikTok. They don't want to see that happen. So the other alternative is to have TikTok sold to an American company that presumably would have American interests at heart and rethink what the algorithms are and what the programs are. Interestingly, if we do this, we could get some access to what the algorithms has that they're inside TikTok. Now, this is wildly complicated, but we need to understand that this innocent looking, your kids looking at a phone and laughing and whatever, That's really the Chinese Communist Party talking to our kids.
You bet it is.
We've got to.
And Bill, as you said, and it's so important to understand this, this is by design highly addictive. Those kids are on it for hours and hours and hours on end because they frankly are now wired to be tuning into it. And you've also made a really important point that the content isn't just these silly dance videos and the like. It is a fair amount of pure propaganda and indoctrination by the CCP, which is in fact being weaponized, as we've seen lately, with kids turning out in large numbers to help save Hamas.
And we have an election coming up, Frank, as we all recollect. And by the way, the Chinese do not want to see Donald Trump win this election. So you can, and all of social media is in this category. It's highly addictive on purpose. And all of social media wants to see Donald Trump lose and Joe Biden, whoever they replace Joe Biden with, win. So it's also a tool that's going to be used to influence our 2024 election.
No question about it. And Bill, I guess the last comment is the indoctrination of our younger generation against America is another aspect of this warfare against us. And it's got to be resisted. And I pray that turning over the management to some outfit other than the Chinese Communist Party would make a difference. But as you've suggested yourself, if they turn it over to the Carlyle Group, for example, or any other captured elite, you may get much more of the same. And we
interestingly,
can't
I think
that.
David Rubenstein would do a good job if the spotlight were shined on him. I think he's really kind of hiding behind this. I think if Carlyle took responsibility, we might see a better product, a more American product.
We'll see. We'll see. But stay tuned on that,
you're
folks.
Right to be skeptical,
we need to fight it for sure. Bill, you know a lot about these captured elites, as you spoke
about
captured,
at CPAC. Sure.
We'll talk with you more about all of this in the days to come. Thank you, my friend. We'll talk to the rest of you, I hope, next time. Until then, go forth and multiply.